This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Yawning this morning, and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It's Wednesday, the 15th of May, 2024, and you are on the clock with Erin Green. Sorry we started the show late today. I'm looking for a Guardian. So if you are a regular Guardian reader, don't slunk today. Don't take time. Get on the street and get your Guardian right away. Get your Guardian right away. They are selling like hotcakes, and I had a difficult time finding one this morning. Make sure you touch a Guardian paper today. Fortunately, I got my hand on one, and so I want to talk about what's in the news this morning. It's a Wednesday. That means that this is the day when we combine On the Clock with Guardian Radio AM to discuss what's in the news. Well, I have a conversation for this morning. It is based on this question, or rooted in this question: what is the role of the public intellectual in a small island developing state? I decided to start the show with Pay Me What You Owe Me by Tony McKay. It was sent in by an avid listener and a local advocate and activist who's only herself a few steps away from being a public intellectual. And she said, "Green, you know, I just learned recently that this song, Pay Me What You Owe Me, by Tony McKay, is actually about reparations." Right? The song, Pay Me What You Owe Me, by Tony McKay, is about reparations. And in that moment, I realized that Tony McKay is one of the last true public intellectuals, I think. Or at least he is definitely a public intellectual from his generation. And I wonder if the constraints of politics in a small island developing state caused public intellectuals like Tony McKay to express his thoughts through music. We have another artist who I think fits this category in the Bahamian context of public intellectual. That's KB. That's KB. KB had to find a form. KB found a form, like a genre, a vehicle through which to have these conversations with the collective. Stupidvisor, jokey leaders, right? All the Meat is a song that gives us an opportunity to explore our love affair with obesity, because that's what it is. Just because she fat. Right? And so I'm waiting for Mr. Newry, so we could sort of engage in that conversation. And as a part of that conversation, I wanted to explore an event that took place as a part of the 50th Independence celebrations and the masterclass series hosted by the Independence Secretariat and partners, I wanted to bring into our conversation about public intellectuals a short interrogation of the distinguished conversation on the theme, A Return to Idealism, with panelists Sir Franklin Wilson and Sean McQueenie, KC. But I also want to talk about what's in the papers today, which is on The Guardian. In The Guardian, the headline is Not in Our Backyard, Residents Push Back at Location for New Hospital. In The Tribune, the headline is Residents Concerned Over $290 Million Hospital. I'm glad we're having these two conversations together because many times the political class renders or labels, right? They put a label on contributions by the general public as mischief. They like to falsely assign a political mischief to say, well, if you oppose what the government is doing, you must be a part of the opposition party. In fact, the Bahamas is not operating in a silo in this instance. This morning, I saw a post from a friend, I think in Guyana or Trinidad, who said the very same thing. He's a columnist. He writes in his local papers. And he had to put out a disclaimer to remind people that just because the fact that I'm critiquing the governing party does not mean automatically that I am a member of the opposition party. This is what the narrative that the political class has set, has attempted to entrench in stone, that any critique is just blind political opposition being offered by sycophants, which erases the role of the public intellectual in society. And so I'm going to say, introduce Mr. Nuri. Good morning, Mr. Nuri.
Good morning, sir. I'm late, just getting this mic on. I'm excited about this topic, mm-hmm. public intellectualism in the Bahamas. I see where you have mentioned the narrative of being classed as the opposition or part of the opposition for offering critique. Mm-hmm. And I smile because I see that, too, is at play regarding the hospital, the proposed site of the hospital. And now there is a debate on whether Bahamian people are just upset that this administration is about to fulfill its promise and concluding and building the hospital, or are they upset about the consultation or lack thereof, or of the site, the proposed site?
Real dynamics,
saying, well, I agree with the hospital, but let's reconsider the site or a better site. Mm-hmm. And now that's the debate. Is it that the objection is because of politics, or is the objection a sound objection of trying to find a better solution?
Well, let me say that that's what the political class wants the debate to be. The political class wants to frame the discussion in this way, right? That the people who are complaining are obviously just political opposition, because everybody knows that we need a new hospital,
yes.
Right? But when you interrogate further and you realize, and I want to read from the article, and we're going to go from the Tribune front page to page 3. I want to find the description of the hospital, what is expected to be there. The 200-bed specialty hospital will specifically host women and children, featuring a neonatal unit imaging services, morgue and pathology services, and telemedicine. I want to stick a pin right there.
It should be stick a pin right there. Because I smiled. Go ahead. I'll see if you've come to the same conclusion I came to.
Everybody's talking about a new hospital. We're getting a new hospital. All the and I will say this with certainty, all of the PLP's media operations, right, are saying you're getting a new hospital, two new hospitals, Grand Bahama, New Providence. But the article says what it is, right? 200-bed specialty hospital will specifically host. So my critique from the very beginning is, why do you continue to call it a brand new state-of-the-art hospital, giving people the impression that you are replacing PMH or you are adding another full range services hospital, when in fact you're building a specialty clinic, a state-of-the-art specialty clinic for specific elements of healthcare? I think it's misleading.
A political promise was made. The political promise was that we're going to get a new hospital. You are dealing in semantics. And I understand and appreciate the semantics you're doing, because the Bahamian people need to be aware and apprised of what it is. However, the Bahamian people, sensible Bahamian people, know that we are in a crisis in terms of violence and blood and gore, right? Even though you say it's going to be a woman's hospital, right, or a children's hospital, the inundation of a particular type of demand, which is accident emergency, needing blood now, emergency surgeries, will demand that that specific hospital cater to what it is that we need, and which is emergencies.
Right. And so then, right, who gets disadvantaged? Women who, and let me just say, there's been a problem at the maternity ward.
There has been a problem at the maternity ward.
Right? Women who are hoping for a different circumstance, a different environment in which to have their children, will they be left sidelined again because trauma care?
Trauma is emergency.
Is prioritized.
Even in this space. And I think, even though I understand that you're trying to show the distinction on what the purpose or objective of this hospital is, trauma care is an emergency and it trumps all. So I hear the narrative that this is what is intended, right? Mm-hmm. You see that even in our clinics are now turned to mini hospital because of trauma care. You get jerked, you say, go to the clinic. We can't see you at emergency, right? You get shoot, see if you go to the clinic first. And if not, you go and wait on a gurney, or if there's no gurney, in the waiting room until we get a bed space, until we get a medical doctor access. Mm-hmm. We know that we're short. So I had a narrative and I appreciate it. But that we need space for a general hospital. We need a bigger, grander general hospital.
I mean, and we're at the point now where we had a local political advocate expose, right, a level of mold in parts of the hospital that was so untenable that PHA or the authorities responsible issued a statement almost immediately indicating they're aware of the problem and they're actively engaged in mitigating exercises, right, to clean up the place. You can't extract the mold. You can't extract all of that mold from that building, from those series of buildings. That building, PMH, needs to be
decommissioned.
Right, condemned.
We know that.
And rebuilt.
Yeah, we know that.
And rebuilt. So the conversation in and of itself seems not fully formed, not well thought out.
Nor is it addressing our
actual
critical
needs.
Yes.
Or there is an agenda here beyond what the public can see that the government is unwilling to explain to the people who ultimately have to pay for it.
I'm not sure what you're trying to suggest.
I mean, either they are incompetent and they don't have a plan, a la the tabling and passing in the lower house of two new bills, the electricity bill and the natural gas bill, and then days later, the minister responsible for energy will get up in the House and say, yeah, well, we don't have all the plans worked out yet. We actually can't speak to anything because we don't have the plans worked out yet. This situation is similar.
You think that's an example of that?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, let me read again from the Tribune article. Dr. Darvill told Dr. Roll to, quote, reach out directly, close quote, to the PHA managing director for the answer, but defended the country's health system while acknowledging the shortage of allied healthcare workers. Now, I didn't put the question there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a series of questions. I didn't read off the questions that he's responding to, but the response in and of itself to any question.
Is it that was an inadequate response?
I mean, you decided to have a town hall meeting.
And now saying deferring it to other people.
Right.
And you set policies.
Similar to the Prime Minister's response to reporters that asked about the status of the process of the Public Disclosure Commission. Reporters went to the commissioner, mm-hmm. asked salient, relevant, and appropriate questions. The chairman then directed them to ask the Prime Minister, who's also a part of the commission, just in case you all didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And the Prime Minister, in response to same questions being asked to him, said, y'all should just go ask the commission.
Yeah. Don't come to him.
Even though nothing can happen with the commission without him.
Even though he set the policy to ignite or initiate the commission to do anything else.
Right. Even though he's statutorily responsible for the why.
My question to you, Aaron. You specify what this particular hospital is proposed to be. It's mm-hmm. a specialty hospital for a particular set of people,
mm-hmm.
right? We know the Bahamian people have been crying out for a new general hospital because of the crisis we're having at the PMH at this present time. It's inadequate, right? We know that. The minister knows this. He knew this when he made the promise that we're going to get a new hospital because we as acknowledged the hospital is at crisis. We need to change. But they decided not to deal with the crisis, but to do a subsidiary response.
Well, no. I think that this is an attempt to deal with crises, smaller crises.
Smaller crises.
Like I say, the specific element, the neonatal, the maternity element,
yeah.
that's a response to an actual crisis.
So for the rest of the crisis, are you saying that there are proposed new hospitals in the pipeline?
No, also, we know they can't afford more than one.
So,
but the point I make...
the general crisis is not being addressed.
Right. The point I'm making, though, is that the problem doesn't sit with us. The problem, again, sits within an administrative crisis that isn't able to strategize, I think, to properly strategize the use of the resources available to them, and a political culture that makes them unable to do their job of governance.
Hmm.
Like I say, this neonatal and maternity ward, we need that.
Yes. It's a branch of what we need for in general.
In general.
A number of things.
But specifically in response to an existing crisis, we need that. The problem is that those responsible will not highlight or shine a spotlight on that thing that is a crisis that they're responding to.
Allow me to beat you, right? You mentioned neonatal care, mm-hmm. women's health, right? At this present time, there are a number of doctors, physicians, who would say a particular demographic is taking advantage, is using the maternity ward, the mm-hmm. prenatal, antenatal clinic more than Bahamians.
Did they use the word taking advantage? See, because if the doctor said, well, there's a certain demographic in society that is using these services more than other demographics,
twice as much,
I'd say that's fine. But if a doctor actually used the term taking advantage of, then my response to that is, sir, turn in your
stethoscope
whenever you're ready. The wording is very important.
Yeah, and I said you can. I give you space to insert whatever wording you want.
No, that's the wording you use.
Yeah, but I said give you space to insert whatever wording you want.
No.
But the point I'm still trying to make: there are physicians, social services personnel who would say a particular demographic is using, utilizing, see all those words I could use also, the antenatal, prenatal, whatever the care, more than the standard Bahamian.
All right. So let me...
Right? And if a particular hospital is being built for women of the Bahamas in general, broad, whoever here in the Bahamas, and we see that a particular demographic uses it more than the
other demographics,
other demographics in the third country,
yeah.
Should Bahamians cry out to say, hey, I know this thing is needed, but there needs to be steps in order to make sure the facility is available for Bahamians when they reach. Not to say there are no beds available or you got to wait. I mentioned that because I know, even though my wife paid for private care at Princess Margaret Hospital, and we had paid it 3 months in advance, right? Paid everything in cash, right? When I reach, right? They said there's no private rooms. There's been no private rooms I didn't pay for, right? And of course, I had to make noise because I didn't pay, right?
Well, of course, that's a technical administrative crisis. Like, how could you have received my money and you have a receipt saying that I'm scheduled to be in that room and in that bed, and then you take money from other people and schedule them to be in that bed at the same time? That has nothing to do with migrant class. That has to do with incompetence and malfeasance in a system.
And I'm moving that now to the broader room where they have 12 beds instead of room, and out of the 10 beds, seven is claimed by seven particular demographics.
All right.
Should we be concerned that you create a hospital for better, lack of better words, them?
No.
You don't create a hospital for them?
Stop.
I was asking.
Let me respond.
You just respond.
First of all, I expect and welcome doctors collecting stats, data, to share with the National Statistical Institute, right? I expect doctors to frame that data within the context that they're choosing, right? I do not expect to hear a doctor, a nurse, a professional with a statutory obligation to their clients, customers, whoever they serve. I do not expect them to use the language taking advantage of. That indicates a crisis within the field itself, and whether the standard bearers are ensuring that all that are part of that sector are upholding the standard. That type of language warrants the removal of your...
And all that semantics. The point is still being made.
No.
And then I don't want to move away from...
No, we shouldn't be... The concern shouldn't be that migrants are...
But that's not a concern. That's just a sub-concern.
The concern shouldn't be that migrants are overwhelming a system. The concern should be that those who are responsible for the system cannot manage it, cannot grow it, cannot enhance it to be able to fulfill the needs of the constituents of the categories of people it is expected to serve.
We already know that that's what's happening. But I want to stay on the topic in terms of intellectualism and the debate or lack of debate, and in terms of making space for Bahamians to express themselves.
But that's what I'm talking about, that the doctors should be engaging the debate differently, not saying that, oh, a sector of the society is taking over or absorbing all of the services.
And I think you're reaching. I'm not sure that's what you said, taking advantage of, and there's different definitions of it.
Yeah, but that's...
You are just hopping on that language. But, and I said, insert any word you want.
This is the conversation. No, but this is actually the conversation that you're having, right? Mm-hmm. When we go to, and I tell you, I found this article to give a sense of what a public intellectual is, right? Here's a quote from an article in Search of a Public Intellectual. Real intellectuals are never more themselves than when moved by metaphysical passion and disinterested principles of justice and truth. They denounce corruption, defend the weak, defy imperfect or oppressive authority. Close quotes. The notion of the public intellectual emerged in the latter part of the 19th century in France in the context of what came to be known as the Dreyfus Affair in 1894. You may have heard of that. That there's a movie. There are references in all kinds of media we have watched over the last four decades. An army captain, Alfred Dreyfus, was accused of treason. it was alleged that he sold military secrets to the Germans. The French public was bitterly divided on the issue. A number of anti-Semitic organizations began to tom-tom the disloyalty of French Jews. So this incident caused a stir, and people started talking about anti-Semitism in the perspective of hate against Jewish people. Some efforts were made to defend Dreyfus. The evidence against Dreyfus was scanty, and another officer was soon in the crossfires. He was acquitted. The injustice, though, was so palpable, the racism so stark, and public prejudice so unmistakable that intellectuals could no longer confine themselves to their respective ivory towers. The distinguished novelist Emile Zola wrote a letter titled J'accuse, well known, published in a newspaper, Laura. He attacked the army for covering up the mistaken conviction of Dreyfus. In August 1898, the document incriminating Dreyfus was found to be a forgery, right? Interestingly, however, the affair generated the acclaimed French tradition of, quote, intellectual engage, close quotes. The right wing used the term intellectual with contempt, like a slur. French society continued to believe that the intellectual had to engage with injustice, arbitrary state power, threats to individual liberty, and racism. When the philosopher and writer Jean-Paul Sartre, admired and loved as a public intellectual, died in 1980, reportedly 50,000 people attended his funeral. He believed, I'm going to read from there, Sartre had argued that the intellectual had no right to be at a distance from controversy. He simply did not have the privilege of being attached. He had to abandon self-reflection in the environs of the university and take hold of the era to change society. There could be no private life of the mind in abstraction from social and political issues and struggles. In 1935, French intellectuals organized an International Writers Association for the Defense of Culture in the World, held in Paris. It played a major role in turning the course of literature and Urdu poetry in India. And people like Aldous Huxley participated in this event. Now, that was written by an Indian person from their perspective, right? We know that there were African intellectuals as well, right? Across the globe. And so this is just a specific perspective on the emerging of that.
So let me challenge you. Mm-hmm. Is there space for public intellectualism in the Bahamas? Right? And of course, the obvious answer, of course, there must be space. Mm-hmm. But our culture and our social norm dictates whether the space is there and existing and is thriving. And that's why I asked the space. Let me give you an example.
Yeah.
At one point in time, during an election, yourself, mm-hmm. as a social intellectual, mm-hmm. creating new vocabulary words here, as a social intellectual, proposed that you go in and spoil the ballot.
Right.
There were also academic intellectuals mm-hmm. who joined in or who had a parallel conversation in the name of Nico Bethel, I'm not sure.
Alicia Wallace, Bethel, Ian Strawn.
Ian Strawn.
Yeah.
Mentioned something, I think, spoil the ballot also.
Right.
Right. And the cry out by the political class and the political zealots and the sycophants, right, saying you all are traitors to the Bohemiana, to the Bohemians, because there is no space for that idle talk. See, this is not intellectual talk. It was idle talk. And I go back to my question to you. Is there space for intellectualism in the Bahamas where the culture, our culture, does not allow it to breed?
The fact that the culture does not want it to breed suggests that there's space for it, right? They are trying to remove it from the space. Not that there's no space for it to get in. They're trying to kick it out. They're trying to shut down any interrogative conversation. They're trying to shut down any critical conversation to the point where those who were opposed didn't even explore their own constitution for weigh the validity of the idea.
Then I beg you again, Dan. Mm. there's a discussion right now between the government of the Bahamas
mm-hmm.
and the Grand Bahama Port Authority, right, about whether taxes are owed. There is a space for intellectuals to debate the Constitution and the both proposed idea. That is not happening. However, the chairman of the Progressive Liberal Party says it's political. Anyone who opposes the government seeking the taxes is being political. And there's no space for no debate to say which side should be good or not.
But in fact, what they said was anybody that opposes or says or does anything to suggest that you oppose whatever it is the government is trying to do must be a part of the opposition or must be a part of the GBPA, the specific opposition in this dynamic, which shut down all critique.
All critique.
And then what it does is that for any professionals that would hope to be a part of a project, an initiative at the national level, as opposed to engaging the subject as an expert in the field, they sit in a corner because they don't want to jeopardize their opportunities for employment in the future. It is the political class that has created that narrative to expedite what it is they want to do, to make it easier to do what it is they want to do. That is the perfect example. And so when the prime minister got up and said, having the media, you know, it's such a problem, sir, in one fell swoop, you attempted to shut down any engagement by any experts or public intellectuals. What you want is for people to beg you for a meeting to come and share their ideas with you in private so you could then take those ideas and hopefully shape a more effective narrative for what it is you want to do. But allow the public intellectuals to engage the issue in the public domain so as to avoid any appearance of affiliation with a particular political party. That's why when any professional and every professional comes on my show, I ask them, do you have a journal? Does your sector, does your field, do you have a journal where experts contribute regularly and so that the public can access your expertise shared with relevance to the Bahamian dynamic? So that when when policy ideas are raised by politicians, the average citizen has a non-political source, an expert source to turn to be able to create an informed opinion on the policy matter.
I know we're about to go to the phone lines, right? But I have a text here that says, all the problems you guys are discussing need to be first addressed at PMH. Then we can talk about a new hospital. But for political points, all of our concerns would be swept aside and a new hospital would be built in time for it to make a splash in the PLP's blueprint for change 2.0 in the next election cycle. And I think that's a political post, mm-hmm. right? The idea here is a hospital was promised, a hospital is being delivered. Now, is it the hospital that had been promised could be debated and should be debated publicly? And I believe that in this Bahamas, there aren't any social intellectuals, right? And I'm beating people here. There aren't any public intellectuals to go and challenge the government publicly and said, even though you have decided at this spot, right? Even though you have the specialists and experts who are proposing and telling you why this is the best spot, right? Mm-hmm. There exists no space to say, I have an alternative point that should be considered, and the government say, okay, we will listen to your point and come back with an alternative solution. There's no space for that. Because at this present time, everything has been concluded. So there's no public intellectuals here because there's no space for it. That's a big thesis, eh? Let's go to the caller. Yeah, let's
go to the caller before I challenge that.
Yes. Go ahead, caller. Press that button there.
Caller, you there?
There's nothing. Okay, then you didn't challenge it. The caller, we missed the caller. Sorry about that.
That's one of those things I'm supposed to remember from COB time. That's one of them little literary traps, man.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of those little literary traps. Like, it's a circular argument. They left no space, so there is no space.
Yes.
That's not true.
That's not true?
No. The space, that space is inherent, right? It's inherently present. And they have to act, they are actively attempting to invisibilize that space. The space is not visible, not because it doesn't exist, but because those who are supposed to occupy it do not occupy it. But secondarily, when someone dares to occupy it and dares to offer a public critique of something at the national level, they get vilified, demonized, victimized, marginalized. They get pushed out of spaces. They don't get invites. Like, one of my favorite experiences is going online and watching events with people who are not experts, but I have a degree of expertise in it, and everybody know that. And I know that there are hundreds of Bahamians that have had that experience, that they are a known expert in the field, but because they are not affiliated with the right groups, they're not affiliated with the right politics, they're not affiliated with the right political narratives, they are ignored, they are marginalized, they are pushed to the side. And then, even when they carve out a space to be able to speak, those people who feel threatened by their presence in the space overtly and covertly invisibilize and silence them.
But let's bring in real-life issues in the Bahamas.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the hospital briefly, as we've been including our public intellectual conversation. And I still want you to give me a definition for public intellectual, what that means, right? So hopefully you can do that.
I got it right now. Let me give it to you right now. And so this is public intellectual in American English from Webster's New World College Dictionary, 4th edition. Public intellectual is an intellectual, often a noted specialist in a particular field, who has become well known to the general public for a willingness to comment on current affairs. There is a space for the public intellectual, even in our system of governance, even in our constitution. That space is the upper house. It is the Senate. The Senate is supposed to be filled with people who are noted specialists in a particular field, who have become well known to the general public for a willingness to comment on current affairs, along with their practice in the field that they're in, or they are social leaders, they are community leaders. This is a perfect instance of where the political class and the political narrative have attempted to shut down that space for political expediency, or in the very least, they refuse to allow political intellectuals into the space. And if they do make it into the space, and I'm hoping that if we have time, we could look at this event, Return to Idealism, because this is the reference.
Yes.
When they do get into that space, they become so overwhelmed by the political culture that the public intellectual side disappears. They like to be known as public intellectuals. They like to speak as if they are public intellectuals. But the truth is, the political class overwhelms them, and they become subject to whatever's happening in the space. And those are harsh words. I know they're heavy words, but the irony is that that's what that event, A Return to Idealism, asks us to do.
I even beg you to say, what was the event, the town hall meeting, to inform the residents about the proposed hospital? Is that a public forum for public intellectual?
But listen, right, it is, because it wasn't a town hall meeting to inform the residents. It was a town hall meeting to inform the general public of what's about to happen, because it impacts the general public as well. It will require resources from the general public. We, the people, though, understand the need to center the residents closest to the site in the conversation. We understand the need to make space for them, give them a little extra space, but the conversation is for all of us. And that's another example of how the political class attempts to invisibilize the role of the public intellectual.
I like how you used the word, what will happen, rather than what can happen. So you have concluded, like the rest, like at least I did, I'm not sure if the residents immediately have concluded, that this has been concluded on. And you're now being informed of our conclusion.
Yeah.
That this is not a public debate of there can be an alternative site or there can be a better site. We have done the research. All of the concerns you have, we come to give you an answer or response
and
to
then
that.
A question has come up. Are they using Frankie Wilson's land? And how did Frankie Wilson acquire that land? Because God forbid, Frankie Wilson acquired Crown land, then going to lease it or sell it to the government, and some poor soul makes their way to the hospital, and somebody looks at them and say, oh, you at the wrong hospital. You need to go to PMH. Mm. You need to go to PMH. You ain't supposed to be here. God forbid that happens. Right? Imagine two cars pull up the same time. Both have victims experiencing trauma. One look like they live on the West End, and one look like they live under Tobacco Dove Arm. What you think will happen? Who can be prioritized?
I want to make sure people get charged and not getting free services. But again, it's a public hospital, right? It should be. See, all of this should be explained to me. But let's go to the caller. This caller been waiting for a while, Aaron.
Mm-hmm. And I noticed you wouldn't let me see the text line.
I know. You get emotional sometimes. I can see half the world towards the end of the show. Go ahead, caller.
Yes, good morning, Ms. Green. Good morning, Mr. Nuri.
Good morning.
You know, guys, intrigue me. You know, the conversation needs to be had. I had a conversation with Lincoln Bain last night. And so I really don't know who's an intellectual, and I really don't care who's intellectual, bisexual, whatever, right? What I do know is that the people are crying out, and the people are dying out, right? Mm-hmm. And we have euphemism, and which is a part of semantics, like C.A. Nuri said, right? Mm-hmm. So the question of the ambulance making noise, I guess common sense could just tell you they don't need to turn on the siren in the night. They probably in the daytime and the traffic is heavy, so that one is over. I don't know why these little simple... The ambulance don't need to be making noise, you know. If he could do that in the daytime, so people could know to move on the side, you know, like the police, they always, you understand? So this is a mindless conversation in itself, but as it relates to the doctors giving the data on certain demographics overwhelming the healthcare system, I don't have a problem with that, Aaron. But then we could be supposed to facilitate that, but why should it impede me? Who... Aaron, when I look at it, so you don't think that me paying VAT actually impedes the amount of money that I have? I didn't have, I was just short of 10 grand cash, so I couldn't do a surgery private. So I went to do, when I finally was given the date a year or so before, so I waited like a year and a couple of months, maybe 3 months for the surgery. It got worse. What I'm realizing is that the affordability and the availability, the time in which healthcare is dispensed actually determines what healthcare is. Because hospital, cemetery, or jail, we're all going to face the same time, and we're all going to die. So what I'm saying is, with the lack of health care, it is sickening, because what I'm saying is these people can afford to go away and do all kinds of other things, but me as a taxpayer, all right, let's take, I just bought 3 air conditions. You know the amount of money I paid on that? So what I'm saying is, I spend money every day, and if I go and buy, I am putting money into the society, not getting anything back. Don't mind them. But I still, in this delayed surgery, I had to go pay for a radiology because of delayed surgery, because even with the lack of medical armamentarium within the hospital itself, that actually compounds the problem of health care, mm-hmm. Okay? Because you don't have an MRI. Let's say you send home a lady, she complains of a pain, you send her home out of the hospital, you didn't do an MRI to check anything, she has a blood clot, something happens, whatever it is on a molecular level, she dies, even with anybody. So what I'm saying is the lack of armamentarium actually shows you the lack of health care. The reason why I call to talk about healthcare is to show you they don't really care, because this problem could have been fixed. So we know that we have a migrant crisis. It's the same thing with housing. So the government hasn't done anything to facilitate the influx of human beings, given the fact that if you increase the population, you automatically need to increase the healthcare system. And mm-hmm. Common sense could tell you the migrant population is a burden on the healthcare system. As it relates to social services, they know it need to do a complete audit of the social services, because anybody, even a blind man, can see that politicians and their sweethearts and people who don't need social services checks are getting social services and getting food stamps. I see them in the food stores. So you could go and do the investigation. You could have a list of people, and I guarantee you that some people being given social security assistance doesn't deserve it. And that's just the way it is. And this is the way they're doing it. They're eating the system. So instead of giving them money, they would actually use the taxpayers' money. This is nothing new, you know. So and as it relates to the debate, right, Mr. Nuri, you listening?
Yeah, Mr.
Nuri. Me, a debate for me? Anything, food, religion, and politics. And let me tell you something. With healthcare, intervention is best. All Dr. Davila has to do is tell the people them stick to plant-based diet and stop eating all this dog food and allowing all of these products that don't allow, be allowed in Europe and other first world countries to come in and poison our people. And then the people show up at the hospital are sick at very early ages, and you confound it as to why. It's because of capitalism. We are in a losing battle. We are cattle to these people. We must stop listening to words and look and watch people's actions, man, okay?
Thank you, 52.
Now, for me...
I got to go.
Yeah, hold on. For me, a debate would be... I have a debate with anybody on those three topics, and they don't have no book and no phone in their hand, and I have a fact check in the background, and I will debate any one of them on anything that I decide that I will debate on, even if they are pundit or non-pundit, okay? I'm sick and tired of the cattle type mentality and the contempt for the Bahamian people. I represent the Bahamian people, the public.
Thank you,
okay?
52.
Before we go to the next caller,
yeah,
does knowing the details in the PPP, the public, private-public
partnership,
the land lease, if there's going to be a land lease, land swap, is there going to be a land swap? Is this how long has this been, this deal being made, a year ago, 2 years ago, or just came up, or has a deal been signed already? Does knowing this information, or is knowing this information important? Do you want to know this information beforehand as we make
this? Yes, yes. I mean, that's inherent. First of all, don't ask me if I want to know it. The truth is you're supposed to tell me it whether I want to know it or not.
And if I didn't?
Then it's an indication of an administrative crisis and hope that after the assessment, we all fall on incompetent. See, because it's better to be thought a fool than proven a crook, right? It's an indicator that an assessment needs to be made. It's not a matter of whether the Bahamian people want to see it or not. We must see it. We have a duty to ensure that all things are where they're supposed to be.
And if I say, for this argument and this sake, that all of these things have been concluded already, now what will the Bahamian people do? Or what can they do? If I say the deal has already been, you didn't get to know the deal, it is what it is.
Take it before the courts.
Take it before the courts.
I mean, now, I can see why you get disappointed there, because we haven't challenged the lack of public disclosures before the courts, right? We didn't do that. We're not even addressing the things that we have explicit tools to address, that there are already mechanisms and measures in place to address.
Let me ask you another question. If the Minister of Health mentioned that to avoid traffic, we can do an overpass, right? And I challenge him and say, what is the social implication of the overpass? And he says, well, I don't have that information yet. Is it disingenuous to mention that we could have an overpass?
Of course it is. Of course it is disingenuous to mention it. I also would like to vote on that question. No, Bahamian drivers are not sufficiently mature or competent to introduce overpasses to our roads.
You may have to go in detail what you mean by that, right?
What I mean is there are too many big-grown, gray-back adults behind the wheels of cars engaging in and practicing the most foolishness on the road. Yesterday, a taxi driver got mad at me because he had his left turn signal on for about 3 minutes, and he was just... there, and he's just sliding, just driving up like the middle line. He's in the middle of the road. And eventually he pulled back to the right lane, and I had my signal on to go left, and I went left. And when he saw me starting to go left, he decided he wanted to go left at the same time. And then he decided he wanted to row me because didn't I see his turn signal on? And I asked him, didn't you see your turn signal on? You directing the question to the wrong person, sir. Your turn signal been on forever while you're dancing up the middle of the road. That's a perfect example of what I'm talking about.
But sure.
I'm talking about the man in his uniform whites with the large plate on the front of his car that stopped his car to row me because I blew my horn that he ran the red light. And I had to remind him that I can't blow my horn when I'm dead, so I can blow it when I'm alive.
This text says, good morning, Aaron. You mean to tell me, with all this crown land around here, they going to decide to put the hospital in a residential area? All those smart suits in the house, no one could have said no. No way. This have me puzzled. I guess we'll take a break after that, eh?
Yeah. Do we have any strictly commercial zoned areas except for Western End of Gladstone Road?
Gladstone.
I mean, not Fire Trail Road, Western End of the...
But Gladstone Road have a lot of empty space.
So I have a lot of residents as well.
No, go on the opposite side. You where the farmer market is, and that entire area just vacant.
A lot of agricultural stuff.
You put agriculture stuff there. Just vacant now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On the next side, we could talk about, just mention briefly, the Coral Harbor fires.
Yeah. Carlos, we see you.
We're transitioning
to the next side of the show. We'll continue the conversation now. So call back. This has been On the Clock with Aaron Green.
Mm-hmm. That's me.
There's going to be a Man Down Mashup Wednesday where we're analyzing public intellectual. How you say it, Aaron?
Public intellectuals in a small island state.
Yes. We'll be right back.